Hello and welcome to 35 Minute Movies, the Emma Stoners. This is the podcast where we're talking all things Emma Stone, ranking and reviewing as we go along. I'm Cameron. That's Awais. He's Emma Stone's number one fan. Been a while. It's been a very, very long time.
It has. It's been busy. We've been busy doing things, you know?
I've been in London.
UK, seeing the world, seeing films.
Seeing the films, seeing the world. It's been a long time. I've missed Emma, you know? She's
I have as well, actually. I was watching these two movies and she appeared and I was like, it just felt cozy and familiar. I was like, yes, this is because, you know, we've said it before, anytime we watch an Emma Stone film, no matter what we think of it, she's the constant. She's always and it's just, you know, it's just nice, you know. I feel like we start to know these people through their movies somewhat.
Yeah.
When you spend this many hours watching one person.
And the choices they make as a person in the career path. We'll talk a little bit about choices today as well. Someone made the right choice, and if they made a good choice and a smart choice. The answer obviously being no, they did not. So the first one we're talking about today is Aloha. It's directed by Cameron Crowe. Was it 2014, 2015?
2015.
2015. It stars the likes of Bradley Cooper, John Krasinski, Bill Murray,
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, we got a
Danny McBride.
Massive cast going on there. Yeah. And of course, Emma Stone. Awais, what happens in this movie, please?
Isn't that the question of the day? Nothing really, but to sort of give you the official IMDb synopsis, a celebrated military contractor who's played by Bradley Cooper, he returns to the site of his greatest career triumphs, the US space program in Hawaii, and he basically reconnects with his sort of former lover, who's played by Rachel McAdams, while forming this new relationship with the captain that's sort of assigned to him, which is played by Emma Stone, and there's a subplot about how he's launching missiles or something, and I don't really know what's going on. There's not really much of a plot, is there?
It's a sleepy movie. It's a lot of people standing around, walking around, chatting, talking about their like past lives. It's a lot of people. It's like man goes back to island, reconnects with past kind of situation. And I will not lie. And this is going to be quite a short segment, because I think we'll probably have a lot to say about Rational Man. If not, we'll have a lot to sort of catch up on, I guess, in terms of at the end. But this could be a short one, I can tell. I've been talking about the Emma Stone controversy as well, but I didn't finish it. One of the few times I have not managed to finish a movie. Due to quality, it is just not a good film.
Yeah, I want to say, I watched this. So I've just started a new job. So we're sort of in induction at the moment. So which it's a lot of just sort of sitting in Teams meetings all day. So for me, it's a good chance to sort of watch movies because they're really boring. It literally got to the point where I wanted to sit in the meeting instead of I was watching this sort of while I was listening to Teams meetings. I switched this film off and focused on work instead, because it was just that bad. It's just firstly, right, it's a romance, okay?
Yep.
And it starts out with Bradley Cooper's character being really annoyed by Emma Stone's character, because she comes across quite sort of strong in the sort of first scenes. You know, she cares very much about her job, and then literally within a second, he goes from he just falls in love with her. There's no development. He just looks at her dancing and he's like, "Yep, I'm in love with her." And
haven't we all been there? To be fair,
I mean, true, but that whole sort of workaholic personality she had fades completely, and it's just, and then they have a scene where they just fall out. And
we're taking all the boxes for a romance.
It's so unbelievable. Yeah. Like, They don't even have good chemistry together, I don't think.
No, I don't think so at all. No. And Emma Stone's really hard to not have good chemistry with, to be fair. It's a task in itself. I tried to watch this over two breaks at work, basically, and thought to myself, by the second break, I thought to myself, actually, I'd rather just sit in silence. So, you know, it was sort of it's not worth my time. I'm going to enjoy my Costa to myself instead of sharing
it
with everyone.
It's just a mess. Yeah. It's really just a mess. Like, the plot is all over the place. And I know I said this sort of at the beginning about how Emma Stone is the one consistent in every film she's in. I didn't like her in this.
No.
It's a bad performance.
It's a bad performance and it's a bad casting choice. We should really dig into the casting choice because, I mean, it's the elephant in the room for this, especially for this film. It's the elephant in the room.
She's the elephant in the room, Emma Stone.
I don't know what Cameron Crowe was thinking. I don't know what anyone in this film was thinking this was an acceptable choice in terms of... This was only came out 7 years ago or something like that now? It's a terrible choice. Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible choice. I can't... She's a half Hawaiian, half Chinese lady.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell happened? It doesn't even compute. Do you know? It doesn't even... you wouldn't, especially in the first half an hour of this film, you wouldn't connect the fact that that's who she is as a character.
There's no indicate it. Literally, again, sort of talking about things coming out of left field in this film, that comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to indicate that that's the case whatsoever. Why even write it in? Okay, right. Say for example's sake, maybe they were going to cast, you know, someone ethnically appropriate, and maybe Emma came in and they were like, actually, we want Emma. It's not that hard to write out.
Change the surname. You had to do.
It's because for the majority of the film, it's not a big part of the character. So why not just write it out as soon as you realize you've got a white actress in the role? I just don't get it.
It's weird. It's a lot of... I don't know. I'm guessing, does she go on to sort of like show her off her Chinese parents or something? Chinese parents or something? I missed that bit. Is that a thing that happens or?
I got pretty far through and nothing like that came up. There's no sort of explanation. That's what I'm saying. It's something you can easily write out.
Yeah.
I don't know why Emma did it.
It's not a defining character trait. At all.
No,
it shouldn't be a defining character trait. You know?
Why did Emma take this role? That's what I don't understand as well.
It doesn't make sense to me, especially with her kind of personality. I can't see why, like, it happened. It doesn't make sense. It's very, very out of character.
And also, bear in mind, this is the point in her career where she's starting to make...
Mm-hmm.
more interesting choices.
Yeah.
You know, we had sort of Birdman and, like, say what you want about Magic in the Moonlight. It's not a great film and Woody Allen is, you know, quite controversial. But for her at that point in her career, that was probably a very interesting career step. And, you know, coming off of the Spider-Man films, like, it seemed like Emma was a lot more in control of her career and the choices she was making. And that's what confuses me about her involvement in this, because she's a main character and the centerpiece of the whole controversy of it.
But the whole, she's doing it for a script that I think is one of the messiest things, even in the small section I saw, is one of the messiest things I think I've ever seen in my entire life. And you were saying before we started the podcast that they Sony Pictures knew. Thanks to the leak.
Yeah.
Thanks to Seth Rogen and James Franco, we do know that Sony had no faith in this whatsoever as a film, and they knew it was going to bomb. What was it? Amy Pascal said you had a quote from an email.
So this was obviously when Sony's email sort of leaked in 2014. Amy Pascal, who's obviously, you know, one of the sort of heads of Sony, wrote that many aspects of the movie's characters and plot made quote unquote no sense. And then she goes on to say, I'm never starting a movie again when the script is ridiculous and we all know it. I don't care how much I love the director or the actors. It never, not even once, ever works. As much as I want movies to release, this is way worse. At least the marketing departments managed to sell something that looks big and glossy. We have this movie in for a lot of dough and we better look at that. Scott Rudin didn't once go to the set or help us in the editing room or fix the script. And he's obviously one of the producers on the films. And I think that's really shocking. So what, did they greenlight this film without a script?
They'll have greenlighted it on Cameron Crowe's name and that'll be it. That's all they'll have had to go on. Which is not how you should be doing good business. I mean, sure, for creatives that sounds like a wondrous thing to have, but as a film business, that's pretty poor practice. You should be vetting everything. I get as a creative, you're like, yeah, just give me some money, I will make the best film going. But as a business, for those are producers. Amy Pascal is a producer. She should not just be going, yeah, sure, go on, here's a blank check. Because that's what happened with Nolan, and look where we are with Nolan. You know, Nolan's released Tenet's probably one of the worst movies released ever. You know what I mean? There's no doubting that. There's scale and spectacle for that in that film, but I dislike it immensely. And I guess this is Cameron Crowe's Tenet. He's been given a blank check and told go wild.
No, see, I quite enjoy Tenet still. There's like more on offer than this.
It's had a bigger budget, I suppose, than Tenet. Yeah, this had a less budget than Tenet. But you know, it's the same. The analogy I'm trying to get at is that we shouldn't just let directors go wild sometimes, because it can lead to...
I don't know what the appeal of that is. Like, look, everyone misses. You know, directors can't maintain sort of... unless you're Denis Villeneuve, who's just like the god of directors, you can't maintain, because somehow his track record is just unfathomable. Like, but like, you know, even people like... And again... Cameron Crowe doesn't have the best track record. Like,
the best track record going. Yeah, you said before we started the podcast, I was really excited for this one. I loved We Bought a Zoo.
No, I have a nostalgic attachment to We Bought a Zoo. It's the only Cameron Crowe movie I've seen, but I really, really like it. So I was very intrigued to see this. Yeah, that's a quote that you don't hear very often. I'll stand by it. I really do like We Bought a Zoo.
To be fair, We Bought a Zoo, but it absolutely slaps that film, to be fair.
Yeah, but again, I know that's not a universally acclaimed movie.
Film. No, not at all. Not even close.
Like, Cameron Crowe is not the guy you should be giving blank checks to.
No. And like, Amy Pascal learned that the hard way.
Vanilla Sky, I think I heard, was sort of, you know, again, one of those films that's like, you either like it or, you know, it apparently it's not amazing. Jerry Maguire isn't, I know that's very famous, but like...
It's universally loved, but it's not like critically acclaimed, I don't think. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one I know of those ones that everyone famous seems to is. Love. Yeah, that's probably his biggest one for like money, not money, but like critical acclaim.
I just... Maybe Amy Pascal was a big We Bought a Zoo fan. Who knows?
I mean, Matt Damon. Jimmy Kimmel, as Jimmy Kimmel says, you can really see him trying.
It's so effortful. That's the best bit, by the way, ever. It's so funny.
Oh, God. I loved that. Jimmy Kimmel versus Matt Damon for the entire Academy Awards section of that. It's just incredible.
So what are you thinking rating wise, man? That's
a question. It's an easy one. Obviously
it's an easy one.
I would like to sort of like just preface it with the fact that I didn't finish the film. Maybe in the last half an hour it becomes a 5-star film. We'll never know, but it lost me
in the last 20 minutes. If it doesn't, I don't know how the last 20 minutes can really salvage it.
The last 20 minutes switches to 1-4-3 and we go to Arrakis. We're on the planet.
Yeah.
Planet Arrakis.
Imagine. it's one of the worst films I've seen in a long time. It's every choice is just really bad. Like, none of the character decisions... Like, Rachel McAdams is married and has a family, and she's not seen Bradley Cooper in 13 years, but they've like fallen in love again. John Krasinski says like 5 words. His whole character shtick is he doesn't speak. And I'm like, what? Why? Where does this come from? They introduce characters and relationships and they just expect you to sort of go and, along with it and know and who these people are.
Don't you dare waste Bill Murray on me. You don't waste Bill Murray on my time.
I was going to say,
you don't.
You're the
waste
Bill Murray stan.
How does that feel?
You
don't disrespect Murray on my time. And that, Cameron Crowe, is why you get a 1 star.
Do you know what Cameron Crowe sounds like, though?
Cameron.
Oh.
Buzz Lightyear.
Maybe Cameron made this film.
I did. I'm technically Cameron Crowe. It's my pen name. Tell me what Cameron Crowe looks like. I don't know. I just imagine me with white hair.
An old man.
That's all it is. It's just Cameron Crowe, just me with white hair. It's a pen name. All right, the next film we're talking about is Irrational Man. It was directed by Woody Allen and it came out in 2015. It stars the likes of Joaquin Phoenix, you know? Who else is in this film? Just having a look.
And Emma Stone, that's really
and
it.
Emma Stone. Yeah, and Emma Stone.
In terms of notable names. Parker Posey's in it, actually.
Bridget Lundy Payne, who's in... She's Billy in Bill and Ted. Face the Music.
Yeah, Jamie Blackley's in it. He's in things.
I've heard
that name before.
He's a working actor. He has been in things. Our second Woody Allen film of the time. We will dart around. We'll try our best to separate the art from the artist.
I think we kind of have to at this point.
Yeah.
Especially for a film like this, I feel like.
Yeah.
We might have to.
I feel like we kind of have to pull out a little bit just to talk about Emma Stone, obviously, and just sort of thingy. And I would say that this is a kind of a solid Woody Allen movie. I think it's poorly written in some regards. I think it's some of the dialogue is really stilted. I don't know if that was on purpose
really bad.
Or what, but some of the dialogue is inhuman at points. But Awais, can you tell me what happens in this film, please?
Yeah, so there's like a new philosophy professor that arrives on like a small campus. His name's Abe. He's played by Joaquin Phoenix, and he's known to be a bit of a womanizer and an alcoholic. And it just sort of follows his... But he's sort of very cut off and very untethered from reality in it. The film sort of follows his relationship with one of his students, Joe, who's played by Emma Stone. Jill. And it's sort of them becoming friends to lovers, but also them sort of helping each other and them sort of, in a very unexpected way, giving Joaquin Phoenix's character a purpose to live. Can we talk about the film without...
I will just say that now. I think we'll just talk about spoilers. It's been out for the last six years.
Is it a spoiler, though? Is it a spoiler? Because it happens quite... early on.
It happens about 40 minutes in of a 90-minute movie. So, I don't know. It's up to you. But if you want to go in blind, maybe watch the film and come back, that'd be great. But we'll just talk about it. So, what happens?
Basically, they overhear a conversation and it's a few people talking about this judge that is going to separate this mother from her children. And they're talking about how much they hate this judge, and it sparks something inside of Abe, and he finds himself sort of with a renewed sense of purpose, which is killing this guy and sort of putting this stranger at ease and everyone else that this judge has affected at ease. And he sort of goes about plotting to poison this judge and then succeeds, and it's sort of him hiding this from Jill and from everyone else. And I didn't expect that. I did not see that coming. But it really worked for me. I don't know about you.
It worked for me too. I think there's a lot this film doesn't quite get right, like we said kind of before. Yeah. There's a lot to be said about Woody Allen's connection writing this. I feel like it's a bit odd, if that makes sense. I think it says a lot about him as a person.
He seems to have a recurring thing of these sort of older, younger relationship, magic in the moonlight.
Yeah, I wonder why. No, I also think it says a lot about him as a person with the whole killing people, the sort of like pretentiousness of the characters. I think there's a lot of like Woody Allenisms in this, where it's sort of like older, pretentious guy falls in love with younger,
pretentious student, smart,
pretentious woman. It's a lot of pretentiousness. I always feel it was kicking, knocking about in Woody Allen movies, and but I did like this one better than Magic in the Moonlight, and I found it watchable and decent, which is probably the highest compliment I can give it. I know you probably liked it. I was close to liking it, but I never quite got to liking it. But I did find it watchable.
I enjoyed it. I know Woody Allen's whole shtick is sort of romance and older, younger romance. And, you know, it is obviously a little bit of a sort of controversial thing for him.
Unsettling, I feel, with the murdering stuff. And it's,
but I think that is what I liked so much about this film, was that felt secondary to me.
Yeah.
In the plot, like for the first half of the plot, it's a friendship, and then the second half, when they sort of do become lovers, that's only because of the sort of the murder, and he does a really good job of putting that sort of to the back, and so it's not really a focus, and in some ways does a good job of diverting our attention from that, I think. The writing is very Woody Allen, which is to say it's very pretentious, very patting himself on the back. I really don't love his writing.
But the dialogue, oh my God, what was every delivery of every line in this film is so... like just every line, just reading it for the first time. You know what I mean? It's a lot of there's a lot of people like, oh well, Woody Allen's just giving me the script, I better just read it right now.
You know,
like
the thing is, I think there are some actors that can pull it off. Like if we look at something like A Rainy Day in New York, Timothy Chalamet, Elle Fanning, you know, they're the kind of actors that can pull off that dialogue.
Yeah.
Even something like Midnight in Paris, someone like Owen Wilson, you know, Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone can't always. And I think that there were many times where I was sort of just like rolling my eyes at the dialogue. But I will say, you know, compared to something like Aloha, they have really good chemistry here. And the two of them are just very good in their sort of dynamic and their roles that you can sort of still watch it, I think. The film was watchable because of them, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think Emma's probably not at her best here, but she's all right. Like, she also doesn't deliver the lines very well. Joaquin,
her character's again, a bit annoying as well sometimes.
Yeah. It's always like, we're going to go off to Oxford. We're so smart and intelligent, and we're so the best. And just
that is the best Emma Stone impression I've ever heard.
And then Joaquin Phoenix is doing the sort of Joaquin, he's almost playing himself in a way. Is sort of maybe not so, but just how I imagine Joaquin Phoenix is in real life, I feel like this is kind of him, where he's just sort of this sort of pretentious professor that lounges around, womanizes, drinks a lot.
Do you know what really bothered me was how persistent Emma Stone's character was about wanting to sleep with Joaquin Phoenix's, like, cause, you know, he's like, oh, we're friends, we're not doing, and she's just hammering on with that persistence, and I was like, that's not good, really. And flip the genders, and you know, it's a problem.
I always think there's a lot of films you could flip the genders around, and it'd be very, very different, very, very different.
Yeah,
you know?
and it, like, those scenes kind of really bothered me, because I don't know what message Woody Allen is trying to send to people. Like, if you wear people down, you'll eventually get with them. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're saying.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that in this movie. Because because the teacher does it with Joaquin Phoenix as well at the start.
Everyone just trying to wind him down.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
This ill alcoholic man.
I don't even know why, but
it's a very odd film. I had very mixed feelings on just overall, but I wouldn't say it's Woody Allen's worst by any means. It's not that Kate Winslet one in the Boardwalk. I can't remember what that's called. Like I said before the last time.
It's also not this week's worst film. Maybe why I appreciate it a little bit more now.
Yeah.
Because I had to suffer through Aloha. Because I was saying this to you at the start of the podcast. I expected Irrational Man to be the weaker of today's films.
Yeah.
And it wasn't by a mile.
Fair mile, to be fair. It's a bad one. It's not, yeah. It's amazing to me how bad it is, Aloha. But yeah. God, Irrational Man.
I do think the wee murder twist does help this film a lot.
Yeah.
Because it makes it a bit more interesting for a while.
I think it makes the movie. I did like that kind of aspect about it. I didn't really vibe with any of the whole like philosophy stuff. I didn't really vibe with any of the romance stuff. It's just kill a guy and see what happens. You know, that's kind of where I stand.
Exactly. Like, and you know, have a renewed sense of purpose. Cool.
Yeah. So go for it. Go off, kid.
Is this film? There was a point in time where I was thinking, is this film kind of, I was like, is this film pro? He doesn't know this guy, and he's like, found a renewed sense of purpose for his life, and he's talking about how great that was, and I was like, and he also tries to kill Emma Stone's character.
Yeah, that's an odd scene that sort of, like, he ends up killing himself in the process because of a very stupid reason, but oh my God.
And then she seemingly gets over it.
She's not fussed.
Is it pro murder?
Does it not have any CCTV in the building? Are we just ignoring that now? Is this a man fell down an elevator shaft and is by his own accord?
I knew that flashlight was going to come back. I knew it.
It's like I said. I'm so sorry. It's 9 o'clock at night.
It's a late one today.
Different schedules at this point. It's our first episode back after a while, so I have been yawning periodically through this. I'm not tired of what Oasis is saying. I literally just shattered beyond belief.
I would be tired of what I'm saying.
Oh no. I've missed this. I've missed our film chats. We've not had this in like a month now. It's really sad. But Irrational Man.
I'm rating the new setup, by the way.
Well, thank you.
We need to talk about that.
We can't talk about that before we rated Irrational Man. I had, thanks to Odeon Cinemas for providing the poster here.
Thanks to Cineworld Cinemas for being the better employer. It's not a competition. It's not a competition.
We don't speak for the brand of the company.
Yeah, it's not a competition between. It's not a competition between Cineworld and Odeon.
No,
it's not a competition between two employees, or former employee.
Famously loving and caring to each other, you know, obviously helping each other out. They're very big friends, obviously. They're all not arch rivals at all. I moved down the stairs into a new setup, so I'm in a room that doesn't have amazing lighting. During the day it's much better. I get a very good lighting on both sides, but everyone seems to want to record after like the sun has set now. So it's all very, very dark in here. Got the ring light up here, as you can probably see in my glasses. And I've got just not a lot going on. I need to color correct it, actually, because I do look very orange. But yeah, it's a decent setup. I got all these posters. I've got the Arrow from the Arrow version of Tremor going on here. Two Sandworm films. Do you like the connection there?
I do, actually.
A Marvel poster I wanted to fill the space
in. The back as well.
Yeah, we got, was it Ron Swanson, Andy Dwyer? Brokeback makes an appearance. Grogu's back, obviously. And a 4K copy of Deep Red, because...
This is actually... You sort of mentioned Groot, and this was something I wanted to talk to you about. It's weird. I was thinking about this as I was trying everything in my power not to smash my head against the wall watching Aloha.
Yep.
at this point in Vin Diesel's filmography, I think it was arguably more consistent than Emma's. Like, I would say we've had better films in Emma's, but we've also had some really bad films as well.
I would say.
And whereas Vin was consistent at this point, which to me is very interesting, sort of, because I never would have thought that.
Yeah, different wheelhouses of movies. Completely different wheelhouses of movies.
Exactly.
Very different. They're very different career paths, obviously. But I always had a lot more fun watching Vin Diesel films than I've ever had watching Emma Stone films, I seem to have. Once we get to stuff like Lala, like her later career, much more interesting.
Exactly. I think we're about to see the shift. I think we're about to see the shift. But like, and again, there have been some good films in here. You know, we've talked about them. But like, I was thinking about this. Vin Diesel was more consistent, weirdly, which is not what you'd think because of, you know, Emma Stone's sort of reputation now. But I just found that very interesting.
It's a weird one, and I think it's just a testament to Vin, and just, you know, he's always making
weirdly
movies. Like Bloodshot, Bloodshot's a bad movie, but I never actively had a terrible time wanting to turn it off. I was like, I want to see this movie again. Even Triple X3. It can be as bad as you want. I got to the end. You know?
I've never switched the film off. Mm-hmm. And Magic in the Moonlight was also pretty hard to get. You know, there have been some bad movies and sort of Emma's career so far. And, you know, we're about to see the sort of shift as well, of course.
Yeah. Just before we go on to closing statements, just to interrupt our small little thought there, I just want to throw a rating to Irrational Man very quickly.
Oh, yes. I would give it 3.
Yeah, I would probably go 3 as well. Failing like the fact that we don't have a 2.5, I would go a 3 as well. It's fine.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah. No, but back to what you were saying, I think it's a very weird situation we're at here, but I think she definitely picked up in the last 5 years or so. You're looking at stuff like, I mean, Failing.
I think literally from our next episode.
Failing, we have a La La Land special next week, which I don't think we will. If you want to be on the La La Land special, by the way, reach out to us on Twitter. We can film a wee segment with you. We're going to finally get to recording these quite soon, I hope.
I think maybe within the next week or so.
Yeah. Then we also have stuff like Battle of the Sexes and The Favourite. We've got...
The transition's happening now.
Yep.
Like, Maniac, this is it.
Zombieland 2, Cruella. And then she's going on to make a bloody Yorgos Lanthimos movie that we'll cover some point in the next year or so. Like, it's, you know, I mean, we're really
like, and like, I think all of, like, even though there's, you know, I think all of the sort of incoming content is arguably maybe probably better than a lot of Vin Diesel's career.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, you know, which is what's so interesting about it. I'm excited. We're getting onto some good stuff.
And we're getting onto some good stuff after Emma as well, which we'll talk. I don't want to announce it quite yet. Maybe we'll hold off. We were going to.
We sadly our plans failed.
Our plans failed. It fell apart because of London, and I blame it.
Just got bad. Yeah. Just
poor planning on our part. But you'll find out who very very soon. Next week will be Battle of the Sexes and The Favourite, which is probably two of Emma's biggest performances. It's a mixed bag maybe for some, but I enjoy both those films, so I'm excited to watch them again. This is the Emma Stone podcast, where we go through Emma's entire filmography, ranking and reviewing as we go along. If you like this, make sure to subscribe. We're on podcast services. Make sure to go and have a look around that. Spotify, iTunes, all that kind of thing. You can find me on Twitter at CamsOG. I do other stuff at Ohi Films, ohifilms.com at Ohi Films. We do basically weekly/daily reviews of new releases at the moment. We just came back from London Film Festival, obviously, so we've got a lot of stuff, content on there that we're doing. Oasis, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Oasis Waste, currently just obsessing over June. Don't think that'll stop anytime soon.
Nope.
But that's literally all my Twitter has been. I went through today and someone tweet me was like, oh, loving the Stan content. And I was like, going, and I went through my Twitter and I was like, I have not had a non, aside from my Lightyear tweet, I've not had a non-June tweet in a long time.
It's that kind of year. I'm planning to see it again at some point. I will say I wasn't thrilled by it as much as you are, but I wish this was a normal review show, because I would love to get in depth about why I didn't like it properly, but it's a lot to do.
Find out by watching your review on Ohio.
Exactly. But just to sum it up, it's a lot of the fact that it is just a part one, and I feel like I don't think it works well on its own, and I feel like it will be a better part two. This is completely off topic for an Emma Stone podcast. Thank you very much for watching, though. Make sure to subscribe. We'll see you in the next one.